Mike, thanks so much for joining us today. I know you're a very busy man. I know you've recently had a new book come out, which is really exciting. And we can come on to that a little bit later. But really appreciate you joining myself and Luke for today's pod.
Paul, Luke, thank you so much for having me.
And all the way, obviously, from the States. But where about in the States are you, Mike?
Oh, right outside New York City. I'm west of it, about 30 miles. Believe it or not, it's where it becomes rural. So I live near farmland and so forth, which is hard to imagine. But yes,
cool.
It's true.
Good stuff. Really appreciate you joining us. So the purpose of our pod is to help small business leaders in the children's activity sector specifically. To engage more children and young people in activity. And we like to focus on improving leadership skills and business functions and all of the wonderful headaches that small business leaders face. But because of the link to physical activity as a community, if you like, we always start the pod off with kind of diving a little bit deep on the nice topics. So with regards to physical activity, what does that mean to you, Mike?
I think it's the ultimate expression of health, and it brings mental welfare and balance. I'm a more than a proponent. I'm a participant in physical activity, including this morning. And think it was interesting. I was listening to some podcasts about physical activity, at least as an adult, and there's two components. There's strength, and strength brings about a quality of life. But there's also this cardiovascular component that brings about a quantity of life and the importance to have both. It's nice to live long, but it's important to live long healthily. And I do know this. I was very active as a child, so it comes natural. It's not something I have to force upon myself. And you can also leverage play. Play for an adult is pickleball now in the U.S. That's the preferred sport, if you want to call that a sport. But play is a huge component for me.
Just to give the listeners a bit of an insight here in the UK, Mike, what is pickleball?
It's ridiculous. It's actually ridiculous. It is it's a blend of tennis and ping pong. So it's played on a reduced size tennis court. And it's basically like standing on a ping pong table and you're hitting it back and forth. So you're not running like you would in tennis.
Sounds amazing.
So it's basically like a lazy version of tennis, Mark.
It's lazy tennis. That's a perfect summary. It really is. But you're moving somewhat.
Yeah, there's got to be some movement there. But it sounds like a good physical activity.
It is. It's good. It's good because, you know, the fear as my friends get older is if I overexert myself, could I have a catastrophic injury? And so there's these activities you can participate in where you can build durability and maybe revert back to tennis at some point.
Absolutely. We should get pickleball over in the UK, I reckon.
I think you're more innovative. You can find something different. It's not that great.
What current physical activity challenges are there for young people in the USA?
Well, it's interesting. Soccer or you know football has taken off here in the U.S. in a way that was never popular before. Our primary sport is American football and American baseball, but those sports it's a lot of waiting and then a burst of activity. Soccer is continual participation. I'll tell you what transformed it. I noticed it with my own children as professionals from the UK started coming to the US. Before, when you were on a soccer team, you were being coached by a parent who had no clue what's going on. And now with professionals from the UK coming, we're learning at a high new level. And it's such a participative sport. Plus that TV show, Ted Lasso, didn't hurt. Like they got a new degree of interest here. And that sport is exploding here, rightfully so. And it's such a joy to watch, and everyone's always moving. It's a beautiful thing.
One of Luke's top shows there, Ted Lasso.
Oh, yeah, I love it too.
There we go.
I mean, the funny thing is, I can't understand anyone's accent. Ted has this like weird Southern accent. I don't know what he's saying. And then it cuts over to the British accent. And I'm like, I can't keep up with this. I have no idea. I love it anyway.
And you mentioned keeping active yourself, Mike, kind of throughout your life. In your experience, how can physical activity help business leaders stay at the top of their game?
So it's funny. I was at a conference recently. It is pretty sizable group. And at the very end, they say, can we do an AMA, ask me anything? I said, sure, whatever you want. And one of the questions was, if you have to boil it down to one thing, what's the most important observation you've had in successful businesses and leaders versus non-successful? And it's something I've noticed, especially over the last few years, there is a direct correlation from my observation of physical fitness and performance of an organization. And what I believe it is that when we care for ourselves holistically, we care for a business holistically. I think what I see people is sacrificing their personal health and focusing exclusively on the business, and they drive forward and it's unbalanced. And I see this imbalance also in the business itself, too great of a dependency on the owner carrying the entire business on their back. So there's a direct correlation. The other thing is mental welfare. I worked out this morning, worked out the day before. I'm traveling right after this. I'm grabbing a flight, but I'll be working out the day after. I brought all of my gear to work out. And what I noticed is during that time, it alleviates any most stress. It's almost meditative for me. And when I start the business, I feel so fresh. I come into it with a fresh mindset. And the last thing is I noticed, and there's been periods of my time like, I'm not exercising. And that period goes way too long. Like I've done that period of my life, about 2 years of basically nothing. That was a huge mistake. I noticed my positivity or optimism is much higher with regular exercise than not. And we have chosen a very difficult industry to be in. Only 17% of the population will ever start or operate a business. Only 3% will do it on a sustained, successful basis. We're the weirdos. We're the exception. And it requires this high degree, almost inexplainable degree of optimism and positivity, because we're doing stuff that technically shouldn't work. And I think exercise correlates to that momentum and belief and positivity.
Mike, from a leadership perspective, physical activity now, given the importance of it, as you just mentioned, is that something that you would actively promote to your people, to your teams?
We encourage, we don't dictate. And I wonder if maybe we almost could, or support to reward people for doing it. But we discuss it regularly. So this is something interesting. Right outside my office here on the other wall is, this is about maybe a 12 to 13 foot wall. On the other side is a tree, kind of like the one behind me here that's barren. It was originally started off as just the branches pasted onto the wall. And what we do at the beginning of every year is we say, what are your dreams for yourself? I can actually, I'll pull it over. I have a mine right here. So this is a little poster I made for my dreams for, I don't know if you can see it, the reflection, but 2024. And you can see this whole section here is health, meditations, workouts, sauna time, etc. So we have these categories. We call it the health, wealth, love, and happiness. Fiscal responsibility, we consider wealth, and there's other elements to that. Love is relationships. Happiness is an expression of joy. But the first thing is health. And the health components, so people write down what their goals and vision are for themselves. Then what we do is with this tree is every week we check in and say, how are you doing on your health goals? And when you accomplish something, and accomplishing something could be checking something off the list, it could be sustained momentum, I've done something for a period of time, you fill out a leaf, and then you put the leaf on this tree. This tree has blossomed into this massive tree. There's so many leaves there that at the beginning of this year, because we've done this now for quite a few years, I said, well, I think we need a new tree. We got to take this down and start over. And the team said, we're not touching this. We're so proud of the momentum. We don't want to forget it. Let's start blossoming flowers as our new markers. And then it's going to be paper birds or something that we're going to put around. But we don't want to ignore what we've achieved or forget what we've achieved. So that's how we do it. Everyone picks what they want for their health components. And so far, that's working pretty well for us.
Like it. Yeah, really, really nice approach there, Mike. I can see on the tree behind you there, you've got plenty of books. And obviously the...
Yeah, that's my tree of knowledge. It's a different tree. I can kind of pan this camera, but that's a different tree of all the books I've written. In fact, it's funny. I have a lot of elements in my office that are specific to reminders and mechanisms. That there says eradicate entrepreneurial poverty. That's my life's mission. That's what I believe is my calling. I have my tree of knowledge here that I believe I have to impart knowledge and create as much as possible. So I intentionally surround myself with reminders. But I want to show you the most important thing on health, because this may blow your guys' mind. I've actually rarely show this. This is a picture of me using an aging application. I kind of find it interesting. This AI has me at age 80 or 90 with a full head of hair and a beautiful beard. That's kind of remarkable. But what I do every morning when I come in, I have this picture right in front of me. I ask myself, did I do something that's in the best interest of him? Because that guy in 20 or 30 years or 40 is going to look back and say, thank you, or what the hell were you thinking? And I want him thanking me. So when I come in, he's asking me, did you work out today? Did you take care of me? And that's my reminder.
Awesome. Awesome. So what we need to try and do, quite interested now as to what I would look like in an AI version of myself in 40 odd years.
Pretty handsome, I'll tell you that. You'll be shocked. Yeah, you're a thing of beauty, even at age 90.
Amazing. We'll give it a go. We'll give it a go, Mike. We'll let you know what we look like. We'll send you a picture.
Brilliant.
So behind you there, we can see Let's Go All In. So I know recently you've brought out a new book, which I have, I'll confess, I've not finished listening to it, but I am at least halfway through it. And it's great. I think there's some really good tips in there.
Thank you.
I'd like to just focus on that in a bit more detail, because I think even though we've only got 25 minutes on this pod, I think there's so many bite-sized chunks we can probably share with our listeners. And I know that book is all about equipping great leaders to have unstoppable teams. Because I guess at the moment, this is happening in the, I guess, all around the world, but in particular in our sector as well, post-COVID, people, if they're not delivering the services to children and young people, then there is flexibility around where people can work.
Right.
Yeah. More and more divides, I guess, or the perception of generational divides. And flexibility is crucial. Yeah, you know, as an organization ourselves, we're really flexible with regards to where our team work, when they work, in particular around their families. If they've got young families, that's very important. And then obviously you throw in the health and wellbeing mix as well. So it has to, for me, in my opinion, it has to be the way we go. However, it throws in a few curveballs, and that's where things may start to go be difficult for small business owners who have teams that they need to work with. So I think what I liked in the start of your book was the story about of your first employee and the journey that you went on with that person. So would you mind sharing that story with us, Mike?
Sure. So I hired my first employee. His name was Elliot. And when he came, or how I qualified him was a simple check of the resume. I go on to explain in the book that resumes are simply a reflection of the past. And we believe if they did it in the past, it's a prediction of the future. And it's not. It's called experiential analysis. And we really should be looking at potential analysis. What could a person do in the future as opposed to what they've done in the past? But that's the way I thought you'd do it. He came on board. My business was under such a crunch that I had to get him out billing right away. And his first few minutes on the job, I said, get out the door and bill. And it became this calamity. What he said he could do on his resume, he couldn't do. When he needed training, I couldn't afford him the time, and ended up in this really bizarre collapse. I called it the reverse golden handcuffs. The golden handcuffs is where you have an employee and you reward them so well financially or in other ways that they will never leave because of the cost of leaving. He reversed it and put the handcuffs on me. He said, Mike, you know, I'm doing all these things for you in the computer industry. Wouldn't it be a shame if all the work I'm doing was locked up and the password's lost because I was no longer here? I think I should be paid better. And I think you feel the same way. Like, he's shaking me down. I couldn't believe it. And I was actually considering paying a poor former employee more because I was afraid of losing someone and not having anybody. And it's his worst kind of case scenario. What I go on to reveal in the book, and what I feel compelled to share with you guys, is there is a far better way to recruit extraordinary people. And the technique is called workshops or camps. Now, this isn't a new concept. It's been around for decades, used at least in the US in a $500 billion industry. So $500 billion industry, which is the sports industry. The sports industry doesn't look at your resume. They don't say, tell us what you think you can do. They have you demonstrate it. But they do it through these things called camps. We were talking about soccer. They have soccer camps here run usually by an English soccer professional, but they will have a camp. What they do is every participant, every child or in professional sports, every adult is trained and everyone improves. But the coach is also observing who are the people that have the most interest and desire and a thirst, who shows the most potential. They tap those individuals on the shoulder and say, we'd like to take you to another field with other athletes to practice more elite skills. And they start vetting out and pick the best candidates. So I played sports too, which in a sport that's probably not popular whatsoever in England called lacrosse. I played in high school. I was an average athlete. I went to a lacrosse camp with 300 or 400 other students. They tapped the best athletes on the shoulder. By the end of the 5 days, three of those students were selected to play for this university at an elite level. I was not one of them, but I did play collegiate level lacrosse because of that camp. So everyone gets better and you cherry pick the best. So the application in our business is stop trying to interview people and start educating people. Run a workshop. If it's in childcare, say, hey, we have a course. It's a 5-hour course on how to do a specific thing in childcare, maybe emergency care or something special that is needed. Have the prerequisite being the elements you need for that job. So I need someone that's already a childcare professional with a few years experience, et cetera. You have certain certifications that's required, and then we'll educate you at the higher level. Charge them to learn, because people who are curious will pay to be there. My parents paid for me to go to this camp. There was an investment made. So we were invested in the outcome. Then train everyone. So everyone's improving, but observe who are the best participants. Those could be your new employees. Here's the best part of this strategy is you're no longer looking at that small, tiny candidate base of people who happen to be looking for a job right now, which isn't many people. Now you're even looking at your competitors' employees who are looking to improve themselves. You're looking at a huge base of people looking to improve. And usually the best people are already employed. So now you're attracting those people who are looking to improve themselves, you get to cherry pick the best and serve everyone in the process.
The phrase, what gets measured gets managed, was coined by the American management consultant Pete Drucker over 40 years ago. Although there have been some alternatives to this phrase, one that resonates with me is what gets measured gets improved.
In recent years, this alternative phrase has gained popularity, emphasizing the idea that measuring progress is crucial to achieving improvement.
Scorecards are a great way to highlight your strengths and identify blind spots in your organization while providing instant, actionable steps on how you can improve that needs improving.
So, how does your organization measure up?
Head to capscorecard.scoreapp.com and take approximately 5 minutes to answer some yes, no questions. Once you've done that, you will get an instant personalized report tailored to your organization with clear, actionable steps. And it's totally free.
That's capscorecard.scoreapp.com. And the link will be in the show notes too.
That's a really, really interesting approach. I think in our sector, the common approach is you rush people through the door when a new piece of work comes in. The recruitment process is so rapid. And like you referenced with Elliot, kind of back in the day, you're left with someone that doesn't really fulfill what you need from the employee.
Yeah. And that is the common approach. It's not the right approach, but it's common. Our research identified that doing that process, which most businesses do, at the end of the day, about 5% of the candidates that are ultimately hired work out for an extended period, which we consider 5 years or longer, at a top level. So very few people work out. Most don't. Because we're looking at a pool that's so tiny and we're not going through it thoroughly. The irony is by doing education, you can start that today, even when you're not looking to hire someone because you're not obligated to hire. So now you're being much more proactive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think most listeners will have employed people and got it quite badly wrong at some point during their career. If we do get a bad hire in an organization, what are the consequences for the business, would you say, Mike?
Yeah. So, well, the cost can be high if the employee is not a fit, but I also want to give a little bit of a paradigm shift here. I was at an event presenting and I said, who in this room, it's hundreds of people, I said, who in this room is an A player? It's a popular label for a top performer, so forth. Every hand went up. We're all A players. I said, fantastic. To the same audience, I said, please keep your hands up just so we know who an A player is here. I said, what percentage of the world population are A players? And the numbers get blurted out. 2%, 5%. The most gracious number was 10%. I said, okay, every hand is up. We have 100% A players in this room, but only 10% of the population at max is A players. There's an anomaly here, some kind of statistical, you know, insanity. And they laughed, but I said, the reality is everybody sees themselves as an A player. And I believe that is true if they are matched with what, where they can express their potential. It doesn't mean it's at your company. So everyone's an A player. The person that you think is down their luck and is having a terrible life, they have an extraordinary talent that can be expressed in the right environment. Now, as small business owners, we have very few of the opportunities. But we first do have to understand everyone's an A player. So my job is just to go through the A's to find an alignment and a match. The second thing is sometimes you hire someone and their performance, even though you thought they'd be a top performer, is low. Sometimes, and it's actually many times, it's not that that person isn't qualified or capable. There's something wrong in the environment. It's an environment reset. Here is one of the biggest lessons I've learned. I had a company. One day I'm running numbers and I'm like, oh my gosh, if we do XYZ or XYZ, we can achieve $10 million in revenue. Like, this is an epiphany. I never had done that before. I come out of my office, I call my colleagues together and with great flair, I'm like, we're going to do $10 million in revenue. Who's excited? And everyone's like, I don't care. I'm like, what's wrong with you? This is our corporate mission. My assistant came to me and said, Mike, that's your vision. What about our personal vision? And that was the realization. That was the day I said, oh my God, the mission or vision for an organization, for a company, is simply the vision of the owner or the leaders. Our personal goals, that satisfies our ego in a wonderful way, but it's our ego. The question is, what serves the vision of every individual? Great leaders, if you want to make someone that's not performing well perform well, the first thing is understand, what do they want as their personal outcome? I want to buy a house one day. I want to learn a new language. I want to learn to play guitar. Whatever those things are, the leader has to become aware of it and then keep that in the forefront of their consideration. How are you doing on those guitar lessons? How are you moving toward buying that house? Our job is not to fulfill that vision. It's simply to keep it in front of them. And if we can block and tackle and support them, by all means, do that. But let them fulfill that vision. But when you care for their vision and keep on driving them to achieve it, they will care for your vision and keep on driving the organization to achieve it. It's reciprocity. That's how you can sometimes, or many times, move someone that's an underperformer to a top performer.
We've done some work internally with our people strategy over the last 12 months, and we've created a what we call a people journey map. So, which I guess the penny dropped going through some of the issues that the sector faces and some of the headaches there you flagged up in those examples, Mike, of like, how do we get the good people? How do we track them to the organization? And we, it's kind of a penny drop moment of actually they. We don't know about them. The people that know about Aspire and what we do, we need to pull them in and have this almost like a pipeline of people that are coming into the business that already know who we are, already know what we stand for. And then as we go through that journey, one of the things we want to embed in this people journey, it's ongoing at the moment, is what we call like a bucket list. So we want people in our organization to share what's on their bucket list, because they're using Aspire as a vehicle in order to drive, like you say, as their own personal vision and their goals. And I think that's a really important thing that we have to do, or in the process of doing it. Why do so many leaders, in your opinion, look at things and go, okay, I've read this book, I've been to a workshop, I've been to a camp as such, I know what I need to do, but then they just don't do it when it comes to recruitment and staff, because it happens so much.
Yeah, I want to share that idea you think is really important. It is the most important thing. I am so proud that you are doing that. So thank you, because you're serving your business. You're serving humanity. You're caring for the person's entire journey. So why do most people get stuck and not do anything? it's because I think we confuse what knowing something is. My son, he's in at university right now, and he's ironically stopped exercising. And I called him out on it. I said, you know, I really think you need to start exercising more. And he goes, I know that, I know. And then I respond saying, you don't know. Knowing is actually executing. So to know and not to do is not to know. So just because we have the thought, until it manifests, we don't believe the thought to be significant. So many leaders have extraordinary ideas, but until we're executing on it, we're saying through our actions, it is not a significant idea. We actually don't believe in it, because if we really believed in it, we would do it. It's a hard reflection on ourselves. The second reason I think many people get stuck is they think everything is of equal importance. And the reality is, at any given time, only one thing can be the most important. If there was this great chain between you in England and me here in the United States, and our job is to make the chain stronger, and there's a million links in between, the mistake almost every leader follows is, let's fix every link in that chain. We spend this exhaustive time fixing everything. The irony is, the chain won't get stronger at all. It'll keep on snapping at the weakest link. The right strategy is for us to hold it taut, look at every link and say, which one's the weakest? Because it'll always break at that spot. And if we fix one link, the weakest one, the entire chain is now stronger to the next weakest link. And then we fix that one, the entire chain is stronger yet again to the next weakest link. Identifying what we need to do first is key, and then adhering to it is key. So don't fix everything. Fix the one most important thing, but make sure that link is fixed before you find the next one.
Amazing. You mentioned your tree of knowledge, Mike. Focusing in on your newest release. What does it mean for leaders to go all in?
It means to be all in on your team. That's the great irony. Is there's a really simple saying that good leaders make people believe in them. Great leaders make people believe in themselves. That's the difference.
Big question, Mike. How can they make this happen?
How can they make it happen? You got to start off by finding your own weakest link. So as a leader, what is the one thing that you can do today to have the greatest impact? There's so many things you can do. And maybe even from our half-hour conversation, you can extract many ideas. You got to pick the one. And it may not be the perfect one, but just picking the one is enough. And go all in on that. I have a colleague here. I do a lot of stuff in the office I'm trying out. And one thing was just a dumb idea. No one liked it. And as I stopped doing that, I spoke with Jenna. I said, oh, it's such a shame. I had such a bad idea. I hope I didn't upset anyone. She goes, Mike, people don't care how you care. They care that you care. That's a success. That's the realization. You can't go wrong when you try to care for people. You may not do it perfectly, but you can't go wrong.
And to kind of wrap things up, Mike, could you share your top three tips for small business leaders?
Okay. So number one is to take a 4-week vacation within 1 year of today. 4 consecutive weeks away from the business, full digital and physical disconnection. Here's why this is so critical. Because right now, as you hear that, you're probably having an emotional heart attack and saying, this guy's insane. And if you feel that way, that means the business is dependent upon you. In a 4-week period, most businesses touch every element of the business. And if the business can sustain or grow in your absence, you have a business that's operating properly. Most businesses are far too dependent on the owner or the leader. So commit to removing yourself, and it'll force you to build the business where it doesn't need you. That's tip number one. Tip number two, take your profit first. This is a mission that I will take to my grave every single business I meet with. I say, your customers are starving for you to be wildly profitable. They'll never say it. They'll never have a customer come to you and say, can you charge me more? Could you rip me off a little bit? But your customers will say, I want your undivided attention. I want the best of you. I want you caring for my child or my life with absolute focus. And the only way to do that is if you're not worried about money. You have to be profitable. And the third thing is empower your team. When I went on my first 4-week vacation, I thought my team would say, Mike, we're working our butts off here while you sit at the beach, enjoy cocktails. You're taking advantage of us. But it was actually the reverse. They said, Mike, for the first time, a leader, an owner of an organization said, I trust you so much that I want you to run this organization. Allow your team to lead. And when you allow them to lead, you allow people to grow into their fullest potential. And that's the greatest compliment we can do to our team.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Mike. I know this is a very quick pod for today. So, but half an hour of your time is very, very precious to you. And we really appreciate you taking a half an hour to jump on the Active Code and talk to our listeners. Well, talk to me and Luke, and most importantly, to our listeners. And there's some amazing takeaways that you shared with us there. So thanks so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. And I hope we can do it again at some time.
I'd be honored to do it in the future. I appreciate both you gentlemen. Thanks for doing what you do.
Cheers, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Cheers.
To subscribe to the pod, search for the Active Code on your podcast app. Let's work together to get more people more active more often.